Hi, I'm your host, Rowan Tonkin, and welcome to Being Planful, the show for FP&A leaders and planning experts. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Being Planful. Today, I'm joined by Howard Dresner of Dresner Advisory Services. Welcome to the show, Howard.
Thanks, Rowan. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not a problem at all. Well, it's an interesting time in the world, and we've got some exciting stuff to be talking about. Certainly the impact of COVID on the planning / EPM space, as you call it. Before we dive in, I wanted to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself to our audience.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in this market segment for as long as most of my life, actually, as it turns out. So I've been covering things like business intelligence and performance management for quite some time. I spent 13 years at Gartner, where I was a research fellow, and I was the chief strategy officer at another EPM company that no longer exists. And since then, for 13 years now, I've led Dresner Advisory Services, and we focus on primary research for performance management, business intelligence, data science, machine learning, and related areas.
Excellent. And I know you publish a really amazing annual report and you do a monthly survey. So we're going to dive into some of that information today for our listeners and viewers. So in terms of why we asked you to be here, it's because of that deep expertise. I mean, you've seen a lot of change in this space over the years. I'm sure you've been through some of these types of situations before, probably not as hopefully not as impactful in terms of our way of life changes, but in terms on the impact on the economy, it's been really interesting and in how businesses have responded. So what we wanted to do today was deep dive into that and talk about some of the market trends that you've been seeing. So I know you've got some slides to prepare and for those to share, sorry. And for those listening, we will try and call out some of the slides, but don't forget to watch on video too if you have a moment. So firstly, Howard, I know you do a monthly survey. How can people interact and engage with that survey?
So we do a number of surveys, but most recently we've been having or hosting a COVID-specific survey, so covidbusinessimpact.com, and you can go there and fill out the survey, and it'll actually give you instant analysis, so you'll actually see how you compare to your peers in the industry around business impact and a number of other factors, and we'll continue to collect this data. Well, I guess as long as the coronavirus is with us and the pandemic is in place, so who knows how long that's going to be.
Yeah, well, it's certainly valuable information, and I look forward to sharing that to the audience today with you. So for those that want to get that analysis and understand how their industry is being impacted, feel free to go and take Howard's survey. As we jump into some of this data, I do want to mention that, some of the ways that different organizations are categorizing the impact and the phases of this challenge and the pandemic is different. One of the ways that we're going to be talking about it today, and we've been using this analogy here at Planful really since the middle of March, is this three-phased approach. The first phase that we saw was what we called the ambush. Everyone felt that this was a big surprise. The impact was huge. You didn't know where the impact was coming from. You couldn't really see the forest from the trees. And everyone was really trying to quickly assess, triage, and make really fast business decisions to really protect themselves quite quickly. The second phase that we see occurring, and some businesses are in this and others aren't yet in this, is what we call the regroup. And that's where people are making more short and mid-term decisions based on what they've learnt about their business through that ambush phase. And the final phase is what we call recovery. I don't think there's many businesses in the recovery phase, except maybe technology like we're using today. I know that industry has seen a boon, and it's probably not even called recovery. It's called thriving. But there's not many businesses out there that are thriving, so we won't talk about that too much. But in those distinct phases, we have seen some changes, and of course it is really really industry specific, and that's something that we'll talk a little bit today as we go through. So, Howard, why don't you tell us some of the market trends that you've been seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that once again, we started surveying the marketplace back in March. Once it became evident that the coronavirus was going to be around for a while and was going to have a significant impact. So just looking at 3 months' worth of data at April, May, and June, just looking at the business impact of COVID-19, and we can see that, to some degree, things are looking perhaps a little bit better. To your point, maybe folks are starting to regroup and things are starting to stabilize a little bit. So you can see, the bars on the right. So less organizations are saying that they're temporarily closed down. And if you go to the far right, those that say they sustained loss of revenues of customers is maybe going down slightly. Certainly, it went down a bit in May and is stabilizing, but you can see it's almost at the 60% level.
Yeah, so a drop in 7% from April through to June. So not a huge shift,
No.
obviously, but an important shift nonetheless, and we hope to see that trend to continue.
Yeah, so we'll see, obviously, as we progress through June and into July, if that does improve, we're hopeful. But at least we have three data points here, so we can suggest maybe things are starting to settle down a little bit.
Yeah.
And then this one's a little bit more hopeful, just since March, asking about the impact on budgets and projects. And you can see the impact of the light blue shaded bar sort of peaking in May. And then it's starting to decrease. Now, granted, it's still around 66, 67% of organizations are saying that their budgets and projects have been impacted. And that impact, by the way, can vary. It could be, very simple. It could just be delays or it could be cancellations. We have more data on that as well, but still some signs of improvement.
Absolutely. And I think, for those that are still in the annual operating plan, I think you feel like you've probably been in the annual operating plan since March, as many organizations are just continuously changing those plans as we learn more and as we start to shift in those distinct phases.
And then specifically impact on budgets. And so you can see going back to April, a significant number, almost 50% said budgets were reduced. And then you can see in May it's starting to calm down a bit. And then here in June, there are more folks saying that budgets are unchanged from last year. So once again, more evidence that organizations are starting to come to terms with the coronavirus and its impact upon the business. And to your point, maybe at the point where they're starting to regroup.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we look at employment impact. And no surprise, if you look at the bars on the left, yeah, a lot of people are working from home, unless you're in specific industries. If you're in retail or food service, you're probably not working at home, depending on your role. So that's been pretty much stable. Clearly, there have been reductions in force that is continuing. It's a minority of organizations, certainly. You can see the hiring freeze go down a little bit for the last couple of months. But it's interesting to note that some organizations, anyway, are starting to acquire new employees. And those organizations, I would suggest, are probably better run, have a better perspective or a better handle on their business, and arguably are performance management users.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two angles on this slide that I see is the second data point there on the left, which is we've reduced our workforce. Interestingly, it's probably bigger businesses that were able to hold on to their workforce for a period of time as they were able to absorb the ambush for a little longer than maybe some of the smaller organizations and obviously them making those changes later than smaller organizations. And potentially some of those smaller organizations that made changes earlier are seeing the recovery for their industry happen faster and therefore that's what they're potentially acquiring those new employees back again. But definitely an interesting kind of dichotomy between those two charts there on the second on the left and second on the right.
Yeah, and we had seen that as well, that at least initially, larger organizations were less impacted than smaller organizations. But you're right, smaller organizations, at least in theory, are better positioned to bounce back more quickly. Just simply because of their size and their ability to move quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So another question we ask them is improvement, general improvement in business conditions, whether or not things have improved or worsened or whether they're stable. And so we can see some shifting here. More folks than the last, well, certainly from April, saying that conditions have improved. And that's certainly encouraging. However, the stability has been, the stability line or bar has been stable for the last 2 months. And fewer are saying that conditions have worsened. So to me, this is one of the most encouraging signs in terms of people's sentiment as to how this is impacting the business.
Absolutely. And is there any anecdotal evidence that you receive through the survey that talks about why people are seeing that improvement at all?
Well, I think that they've done what they had to do. They've, reduced the force as necessary. Where they had to, they may have reduced or reallocated budgets, but they now have a sense of, what the, pardon the expression, the new normal is. So they know which businesses are continuing to do well and sustain them and which ones are not. And they, may even be in a position of bringing people back. So I think that depending, of course, on the industry, some industries are, obviously not in as good a shape as others, but a lot of them, and certainly on average, they're seeing not things to return to normal, but things stabilize. They understand what needs to be done and can start to move forward given those constraints.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad we were able to go about nine minutes into this conversation before we said one of those words. But
Ah,
good
I know, I'm
job.
sorry. There are so many hackneyed phrases now and terms that, but it's hard to avoid them because they're reasonably descriptive and people at least think they know what
Yeah,
they
they
mean.
very much are. So what are people predicting? I know this slide is kind of a bit of a prediction slide from your
It
audience
is.
about when we may
Well, it's.
return to a new or return to normal.
It's, this is just about people's opinions and their attitudes. And of course, everybody wishes things would, quote unquote, get better faster. We would really like to have this, behind us as quickly as possible. But in April, more folks were saying, well, it's going to last 3 to 4 months. That shifted a little bit to, people were feeling perhaps a little bit more optimistic in May. And then if we, go to June, it's largely the same, although 5 to 6 months is definitely up a bit. And I think that the bottom line is nobody really knows where when things will truly get better. They can get stable, and I suppose that's better in a sense, but this is not going to be behind us anytime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll get back to normal for me when daycares start to open back up again, and my three young kids can go back to daycare.
Well, we've started to, lots of our relationships now are, are managed virtually. So, we, as analysts, we spend a lot of time traveling around the world and going to various events. And why that stopped in February. My last trip was in February. And so I'm not sure when that'll start again, but very possibly not this year, but I look forward to it.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to get back traveling again. I unfortunately was meant to be in Italy at the end of August for a wedding, and July next year it is. So there's the business impact on the wedding industry in Italy. So let's
Well,
talk
there are a
about
lot
the
of virtual weddings, so a lot of virtual weddings going on now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So let's talk about the impact of COVID-19 on the planning slash EPM space.
Yeah, you bet. So the first slide is one of my favorites because, once again, looking at that data, asking folks whether or not they've been impacted by the coronavirus and those and crossing that with EPM users. And it turns out that EPM users were. Or at least telling us that they were less impacted by COVID-19. And if you go to the right, you look at those that are evaluating or those that might use EPM in the future and those that say they won't use EPM in the future, the numbers get worse. Now, what does this really mean? Well, I think that EPM usage is a proxy for being a well-run organization. And well-run organizations, although they certainly are all impacted, this, I don't think there's any way not to be impacted by it. But they were able to better manage it because they could figure out the scope and the impact more quickly, and they could adjust their plans and execute against those more quickly than those that don't use EPM and planning systems.
Yeah, so as a vendor in this space, we certainly saw a huge increase in the usage of our application, both in number of users and number of hours in the application during the kind of March, April, May periods. And frankly, a really different type of usage, a lot of ad hoc analysis, what if scenario planning, a lot of kind of, what we call dynamic planning, but other people would call modeling. Really, really drastically increased as people were trying to assess and triage what may happen and build forecasts for different scenarios. And it was really interesting to see and talk to users through that period as they kind of said, well, I don't know how I would have managed without a system. And they were able to build more and more models and more plans and scenarios that those without the technology probably were really just coming up with one or two models, okay and bad.
And we didn't ask any of the non-EPM users what they were using, but my fear is they were probably using spreadsheets to do what they were doing, and obviously that's insufficient.
Yeah.
That has an impact on the business. It has their impact on their ability to cope with the changing market around them.
And I think it delays their phasing into the regroup and recovery, as they're not able to, business is continuous, right? And these changes, I think, COVID-19 was an accelerator. But prior to that, if we think about what was happening in December, we had trade wars, tariff changes that were impacting, huge numbers of businesses, and that was changing on a bi-weekly basis. And then, we add in a pandemic in the middle of the mix, and many organizations probably feel like they've been in this analysis and scenario planning mode for a long time, and they need to, step back and get that fresh air, really, and take that time to probably implement planning in EPM.
But it's also worth noting that those that have experience in developing multiple scenarios and doing the modeling, it's sort of like exercise, right? If you work out and your muscles are toned, you can, better deal with any physical challenges. The same thing is true with EPM. If you're adept in scenarios and modeling and planning, then if something, really impactful comes along, like the coronavirus, well, those muscles are already ready. They're already practiced. They're already, adept at dealing with those sorts of changes. And so that's why I'm saying it's a proxy for a well-run organization.
Absolutely, one of the things a athletic instructor that I utilize. Thankfully, I've got a machine downstairs that has helped me keep fit during this pandemic. They talk about what they call as frequency, duration, and intensity. Frequency being the thing that you need to do the most to stay fit or get fit. As you then start to do that, if you need to increase that, then you dial up the duration, right? So you go from a 30-minute workout to a 60-minute workout, and then if that doesn't respond to any changes, then you start dialing up the intensity. I certainly feel like the intensity has been up at 12 for a long time, out of 10, and we're starting to see that kind of not dial back to a 5 or a 6, but that intensity is dialing back, and some of the duration, the work hours that people are putting in is also starting to dial back. And that has been evidenced by a lot of the data that you've presented today.
Well, let's keep looking. So here is one of the, the early impacts of the coronavirus on planning. And you can see that cash flow, I mean, that's the first thing you worry about, right, in a situation like this, cash flow. And what do we have to do to maintain, a cash flow positive environment? And so you can see in February, it was, I mean, it's always important, right? Don't get me wrong, but, it's sort of a mix of critical and important. And then you can see in March, the criticality increased a little bit. And then look at April, it just shot right through. And a 42, 43% thing is critical. And then you can see in May, it's starting to even out again, still really important. If we combine the criticality and very important, you can see it's still very, very high. But, once again, to your point, regrouping, settling in, understanding the ground rules, if you will, for the new environment, and maybe a little bit less pressure now on cash flow now that we made all of the necessary adjustments that we had to make. And of course, constantly having to remodel, replan, and adjust as necessary, because, you know, clearly we're not through this, but those muscles have been getting flexed. And so now we're a little bit more comfortable with the steps that we might need to take as things continue to be fluid.
Yeah, absolutely. The other interesting stat I'm seeing here is the not important stat in April. I mean, everyone realized that it was important. You know, that's an amazing shift where, you know, I think you've got 3% to 3% roughly each month saying that it's not important. And in April, that absolutely went away as people made those necessary changes, things like, you know, deferring payment plans, asking for payment relief, and setting those new policies in place. And that's obviously then translated through to May, where they're getting back to the new normal.
Right. And once again, it'll be interesting once we have more data to see how that goes. So once again, those of you that are listening to this podcast, at covidbusinessimpact.com, fill out a survey so that we can keep this going and see how things are changing. And then, likewise, looking at headcount, salary, and comp, you know, you can see once again the peak impact here. So in February, it's, you know, once again, still critical and very important. The criticality shoots up in March, and it's still pretty high in April. And then look at May, it starts to settle down again. And so once again, everyone has gone through the process, through that knothole, as we say, doing whatever they had to do, whether it was a reduction in force or perhaps reducing hours, reducing compensation. Many organizations did that as well, instead of RIFs or in addition to RIFs. And now they're at a point where things are stable once again. They have the workforce that they need for this period of time, and they can start looking forward again.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty indicative of all the data that you've shown so far. So really interesting stuff there.
Yeah, and it's, once again, it's painting a reasonably positive, or a more positive, not positive, but a more positive, somewhat more positive picture than where we were in March or April, certainly. Okay, so let's just change gears, if that's okay with you, Rowan, and just talk about looking at sort of a preview of our upcoming EPM report, which comes out next Tuesday, for those that are marking it on their calendars, and just look at what's changed since 2019.
I think by the time this podcast goes live, Howard, it would have been out already, so probably out for a day. So for those listening, go and get Howard's report. You'll probably find it on planful.com.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. So if we look at just from last year, and we've been covering the EPM space in our reports for 6 years now, and so it's we've got lots of data. We're all about our data. And so what's interesting and what's reassuring is that those that say that they're using EPM has actually jumped a bit in 2020, and those that are evaluating or maybe will use EPM in the future or aren't going to use EPM in the future, those numbers all dropped. So those numbers all shifted to the left, which, you know, obviously we think is really encouraging. We think all organizations should be using performance management and planning. It should be the norm across all functions as well. So we're making progress, Rowan. It's a good story.
Good. I'm happy to see. And I think, you know, the one thing that we, you know, when I talk to organizations about is, you know, during that ambush phase, that inability to respond as quickly as organizations wanted really shone a light on the office of the CFO and their ability to respond to something that was so drastic. I mean, not just the impact on the business, but also everyone shifting to remote work. And I know you've done a lot of cloud computing surveys as well. Has that shift in terms of, you know, on-premise versus cloud changed at all?
Very significantly. So cloud, we've been tracking cloud for a decade now, and we've seen it, you know, adoption grow in almost linear fashion. And when we hit April and May, it just shot through the roof. All of a sudden, organizations looking to move to software as a service and to the cloud because, all right, historically, you might have, you know, hundreds of people dialing in via a VPN to your, you know, on-prem systems. And now all of a sudden, like you said, Ron, everyone's at home. who might have thousands of people trying to dial in via VPN. The systems can't sustain it. It's just not possible or practicable, and you don't have the staff to manage it either. And so moving to the cloud has definitely shown up in the data as a priority for many organizations, not just small organizations, really across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And I probably even for some of the smaller organizations, it's the fast track service for them as well, right? They don't need to do any of that heavy IT. They don't have the IT infrastructure to even move there. So really interesting insight there.
Well, many of the small organizations were already there. They never considered on-prem systems. So if we look at, just looking at those folks that said in the future they would consider adoption, you can see that the timeframes have moved in to closer timeframes or earlier timeframes. So from last year, 6% said they were going to adopt this year. Now it's 12%. And if you go all the way to the right, those that said they will adopt beyond next year, that's actually dropped. So there's a sense of greater immediacy. Now, granted, some of the COVID factor is in this data, and the impact is in this data, because we were collecting data really up into, to May or so. And so some of that is definitely built into this.
I suspect if you potentially polled people and organizations later this year, that as people have entered that regroup phase and they've done the assessment, like the post-ambush assessment, they would actually start to see that, this capability was something that prevented them from moving to recovery faster. And we may even see this increase again towards the end of the year. That's certainly something that I hear from the marketplace a lot is, as I said before, it shone a light in our ability to do that replanning, reforecasting really quickly and have multiple scenarios. And I certainly expect many of those organizations are still in kind of ambush triage mode and haven't really gone to that. Let me do a post-mortem, if you will, of what happened and how we can learn from that experience.
Yeah, this is a wake-up call for sure for organizations, and I'm hoping it sticks and that more organizations adopt performance management as a result and really view it as something both urgent and strategic in nature, and that doesn't cease once things settle down, because it is something that long term is necessary for the organization. And sorry, I'm sorry to say, but as a result, I think some organizations won't survive simply because they just can't get their arms around the dynamics of the business and manage accordingly.
Yeah, the well-run businesses are already there, and if you're not there, then you may not the winners and losers. You may not be in the winners category.
Well, what some organizations have told me is that a lot of their competitors are ripe for the picking, and that they're desperate, and so they'll be able to buy share as a result of these less well-run competitors.
Yeah, super interesting.
I also like to put this up here because some people, certainly ERP vendors, go out there and say, well, you should adopt our platform. It all integrates with your other data. And the users and the consumers of the technology are saying, no, that's not really what we're doing. That we really want a best of breed, dedicated EPM vendor that can integrate with our ERP, certainly, but is not our ERP. And you can see that that sentiment has increased year over year. And certainly there are some folks that really want to go with the ERP vendor, but they are really in the minority. And I personally am a big fan of best of breed. I think it gives you a greater control of your destiny. That's one man's opinion.
And would you say that's the same as planning or EPM versus BI? I know the way that I perceive BI is a view of the past, and ERP is almost a view of the transactional and the now, and EPM and planning being a view of the future. Would this be indicative of the same categorization there?
I would still strongly advocate for best of breed, simply because you have a dedicated set of resources on that functionality. Mm-hmm. And when you have a massive organization, a large player, nothing wrong with them, but they have to allocate resources more evenly across the entire enterprise. And so if that vendor is more focused on infrastructure or something like that, then some of these other capabilities may not get the requisite investment and may not evolve as quickly as the best of breed solution can or should.
Yeah, and then you don't get the strategic impact that we just talked about, right? You don't get to be that high performing organization that can take advantage of a crisis. You know, there's as they always say, there's opportunity in crisis, and many organizations that are well run are seeing that opportunity now.
And also with a best of breed player, it's they're more accessible. Mm-hmm. You have more impact on what they do and more influence on what they do. And when you need help, you're much more likely to find a resource that's going to be able to help you than if you had to call a help desk of an organization that has hundreds of thousands of employees.
Yeah.
So not that there's anything wrong with those large players. You know, they certainly, there's a lot of good that they do in terms of platform and infrastructure. But when you're looking at specific functionality like EPM, best of breed, I think, is the ideal way to go.
Absolutely.
All right, let's talk about some other fun stuff. AI, right? Everybody wants to talk about AI and machine learning, and everybody wants to brand it now, improved with AI on their packaging. And I should note that things like machine learning and AI are not new. They're not new. Some routines like machine learning, some of that, which is what we call it now, predates computers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that'll be our secret. So the notion of using statistics, descriptive statistics and inferential statistics, it's math, folks,
yeah.
And math is also not new. Nevertheless, because of the volumes of data these days and our ability or systems' ability to process that data much more quickly than ever before, these technologies have become far more feasible than ever before, and so they are showing up in lots of tools and applications, and organizations are leveraging them. As it applies to EPM and finance in particular, if we could single out finance, they're a much more conservative group, and so things are changing slowly, not unlike cloud, right? Because early on, finance were not as strongly advocating for cloud-based deployment. That's changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a greater comfort level, and I think AI will be the same way, especially once again, finance people are being very conservative, and because, you may be a publicly held firm, obviously there are lots of regulations around what you do. You want to be able to verify and know for sure that an algorithm is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And so being able to audit and interrogate those things and understand them is really important, and that's why you see some of the sentiment that you do, the positive, the folks saying that it's going to have a positive impact has increased to 31% versus 29%, and that's certainly encouraging. But I wouldn't call it a watershed event.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my perception of some of this is that, if I look at other departments in a business, you've got sales operations teams that have sales technologists that are really digitally native. You've got marketing operations, and if you look at Scott Brinker's MarTech slide every year, that's going crazy, right? And what you're seeing in response to some of that is the digitally native technologists in other departments are bringing that capability and that skill set to their departments within the organization, and finance has funded that top line growth by investing in those tools and technologies. And finance have left themselves a little bit behind. They haven't had the opportunity to invest in themselves, whether that's through technology, but also skilled digitally native technologists. I've never seen the term finance technologist on a LinkedIn profile, but I certainly see it in marketing departments, in sales departments. And I think, potentially one of the things to come out of this pandemic is that finance will realize that they missed out in some of those investments, and as we reprioritize the way that frankly top line growth may not be the key weapon for a little while as we look in this future of uncertainty, finance may start adopting more and more technology, and a ripple effect of that will be this adoption of AI as vendors, frankly, are also playing catch up against the other business departments.
And increasingly, advanced functionality is finding its way into EPM,
mm-hmm.
Whether they realize it or not, they may choose not to turn it on. So I think it's a comfort level too. I think over time, education will prevail and the comfort level will increase and some of those features will start to get turned on, which I think ultimately is a good thing. If we can make finance more productive as a result of doing that, then I think that ultimately adoption will start to ensue.
Absolutely.
This particular chart just basically says that EPM is spreading, and that's good within the organization. Obviously, finance dominates it. 60% said that finance are the primary users of the technology. But if you go across operations, certainly even IT, sort of surprising, but IT are users really across the board. And I mean, my personal opinion is, and I've talked about something I call information democracy for many years, but I think everybody has a role as it relates to performance management as well. We all need to plan together. We all need to execute together because ultimately all of our jobs are to align with the mission and the strategy of the organization. And if you don't plan around that, I don't see how you do that effectively, certainly not as a single organism. Maybe, within particular functions, you might be able to do that, but that's suboptimal for the enterprise.
Yeah. What we talk about a lot is, getting out to all corners of the business, and you're starting to see this happen now through your data. But also, once you're able to do that and in a finance-led modality where finance can go and help the business understand what these KPIs and these strategic, decisions can help them outperform their competition, then ultimately you're able to, what we say is elevate the financial IQ of the organization. And, we're starting to see some of those trends now through your data here that organizations are adopting outside the Office of Finance. And hopefully that leads to those organizations that are doing that outperform their competitors as well, which I believe would be the end goal.
Yes, exactly. I mean, as long as those organizations see it as vital to their own success, then I think it will prevail, as long as they don't view it as a tax.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, just a couple of things. We can go through these quickly. Just looking at things like budgeting and planning frequency, changing a little bit. The annual budget still is king, but some shifting there too in favor of weekly and quarterly, so perhaps shorter time frames, which is ultimately we talk about rolling forecasts, which is ideal, but obviously, looking and replanning on a regular basis, especially given the fluid nature of the world we're living in, is ideal. And then same thing before I could look at the shift in forecasting frequency. No surprise there, right? We are, forecasting is moving away from those, annual, biannual, or quarterly periods to monthly, weekly, a little bit of daily as well. So I'm not sure who's forecasting on a daily basis. I'm not sure how actionable that is, but monthly, weekly, sure, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. What used to become a quarterly decision is now monthly, and what was monthly is now weekly. And I'm not sure too many organizations have jumped from weekly to daily, but yeah.
Well, I'm not sure what verticals there are, but I'm sure there are specific verticals where that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And then rolling forecasts, one of my favorite topics, right? Instead of doing a 12-month forecast, constantly, I mean, you might use a 12-month time frame, but always including or shifting it by a month every time you reforecast. I think ultimately that's healthy, especially once again, given the dynamic situation that we're living in and the fact that our plans are changing on a very rapid basis. And so you can see that there is, I have another slide in a moment, which is really cool, but just going from 2019 to 2020, you see a shift of organizations using rolling forecasts as their dominant approach to budgeting. And then you see another shift as well, those that use it as sort of an adjunct to traditional budgeting and planning, going from 47 to 50. And the other buckets are going down, which is exactly what we would hope for.
Yeah, it's an amazing change in trend. People are moving more to that continuous planning mindset, making sure that they've got that forward-looking insight. And I suspect, again, Howard, this is probably the same group of folks that are starting to get outside the Office of Finance, because you can't move to a rolling forecast if you don't have the data from other business units and people aren't thinking that far ahead.
Absolutely, I agree with you. But look at this slide. Next slide is the one that's really cool.
Wow.
Look from February to June June. Nobody, there were none in the two buckets to the right. So those that say we don't currently use it, you know, they just disappeared in June. Now, granted, a slightly different sample for sure, but I think it tells us something. It tells us that organizations are not only embracing rolling forecasts, but they start to incorporate them, even if they have more dated approaches to annual budgets. And so that's really encouraging. And you know that's going to flow to the left. You know, they start using it as an adjunct. They understand how to do it. They see the benefits associated with it. And then it displaces the more traditional planning process.
As you talked about muscle building before, people will be building that muscle of a rolling forecast, and then they'll, you know, they'll get stronger and stronger at it, and it'll become their just habitual way of working.
And I don't think we've ever had this sort of a disruptive event. We've had disruptive events, things like 9/11 and the economy and other issues, but this one has been so far-reaching, and I think it's really forced organizations to think deeply about how they run the business and how they measure the business and how they monitor the business. So I'm hopeful that it sticks, and that when the next disruptive event comes along, the next black swan, as they would say, that organizations will be better prepared than they were for this one.
I think the difference with this one potentially is that, you know, everyone's very scared of the second wave, right? And so there's this immediate slash near term horizon, you know, horizon one, where people are like, will this happen again? You know, traditionally, when we've seen, you know, economy shifts, everyone understands that it's going to take a while to rebuild, and it's likely to happen again, but it's, you know, a horizon, you know, a few horizons out than what we're feeling right now, which is, oh my God, this may happen really quickly.
It could, right. We don't know what the cycle time is going to be yet. And so I'm hopeful that, at least from this perspective, we'll see improvement.
Yeah.
All right, so I have a few observations and then some recommendations, and then we can, you know, talk a little bit about that. We don't know when, you know, this current pandemic is going to end. Things do seem to be improving, at least from organizations and how they're feeling about it. And we do believe that EPM users and companies are less impacted. We're happy to see that adoption is up. We ultimately, I mean, I've been talking about EPM for a really, really long time. And we're starting to see broader adoption. That's good. Specialized vendors versus ERP vendors. You know, we also think best of breed is good. Machine learning and AI certainly have their place. They're, you know, that's going to expand inevitably. And I think that through education and some adoption, I think just like cloud finance, will become more comfortable with it over time. It's not going to be overnight, but certainly over time, they'll see the value of that. And then we see, you know, forecast frequency and rolling forecasts increasing, and that's certainly a positive. Okay, on to some recommendations. use your EPM system. That's the bottom line. But not just, you know, how you have been using it, and certainly it's been helping. EPM has certainly helped those users for things like cash flow and working capital, as well as headcount and comp, but also use the scenario management capabilities if you haven't already, right? So you want to make sure that you're constantly updating your plans, thinking through multiple scenarios so that you can be prepared for whatever the outcome is, whatever that is, right? The second wave, government incentives, anything that we may not have anticipated before. And, you know, look at those areas that are most likely to recover as things improve, and you want to make sure that you can invest accordingly. Unless you have an EPM system, it'd be hard to know that. So you want to make sure that you create your plans based on those findings.
Yeah, and I would say the other big thing here, Howard, is even prior to this pandemic, business was changing rapidly, right? And that pace will not change. I mean, we've got an election this year, so that may change, you know, rules and regulations for many organizations. And you know, the trade wars and economic shifts are just going to keep coming in the current climate. So not just from a pandemic perspective, but from what's been happening in the world, you know, this is a true black swan event. I'm sure we'll all agree. But even prior to that, some of these, you know, gray swans, if you will, have been coming along and really changing the way that we need to operate our organizations. And as we just discussed earlier, organizations that were prepared or at least more prepared, it's probably a better way of describing that, were able to navigate this really difficult situation in a more proactive way, faster reaction, frankly.
Right, and we've been talking about things like scenario planning for a long time, and not enough organizations really do it or do it well. And it's really important to go through that exercise and then revise those things, and it's not something that should be isolated to a particular individual or function. It's really something that all senior management needs to take part in. And so that you understand, as a particular scenario is starting to unfold, you know what your action plan ought to be.
Absolutely. And so,
all right, so one last page of recommendations. Yeah. basically, make better use of your EPM software. If you have EPM in place, make sure you're using it to its fullest of capabilities. If there are modules that you're not currently using, consider using those things. So you see things like cash flow forecasting, strategy management, and certainly rolling forecasts. And so anything that you're not using that makes sense for you to use, you should reach out to your EPM provider and put those things in place, get them up to speed. And then finally, make sure you're not using spreadsheets. I mean, I know it's everybody says that, we've been saying it for years, and everybody uses spreadsheets because they're there. But, you know, spreadsheets, certainly in the context of what's going on in the world right now, probably are not going to help you. Then it's not an enterprise tool. You might want to use them in conjunction with your EPM tool. Okay, sure. But EPM capabilities are going to be far superior to anything that you'd be able to do with, spreadsheets technology.
Well, absolutely. So, Howard, that's an amazing set of data, and I'd love to have you on the show again in another few months and see how things have changed. That's
that'd
for
be great.
Sure.
I'd love that.
I'm sure it would be an interesting conversation.
We'll have more data by then for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, one thing I like to ask guests on the show is, you know, it's the final question of the podcast is what does being planful mean to you?
Being planful just means thinking deeply about the future. That's really, and of course, then turning that into the requisite plans to execute based upon that. But we don't think about the future enough. And certainly during a black swan event like a pandemic, it brings you way down at the base of Maslow's hierarchy. So we very much focus on the here and now and survival. But thinking about the future is really important. And I know there are lots of books that have been written about it and lots of scenario books as well. But that's what being planful means to me, thinking about the future and then turning that into plans that could be activated should a particular future start to unfold.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you, Howard, for coming on the Being Planful show. And thanks to our audience for listening. For those of you who are listening that do want to participate in Howard's study, it's covidbusinessimpact.com, I believe. Howard, is that correct?
That's correct, Rowan.
All right. We'll have a link in the video. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks again, Howard, for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.
Cheers. Bye. Make sure you hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for stopping by.